The close is one of those invisible rituals of the market, an endpoint that feels arbitrary, yet governs how we measure everything that comes after. When a market closes, it is not the world that stops moving, but a particular exchange, a particular venue, a particular clock. Price, that restless metric of human expectation, is forced to freeze for a moment so that books can be balanced, reports generated, and traders may say, at least officially, this is where we ended. Yet behind that static number lies a machinery of liquidity, settlement, and institutional rhythm that continues humming even after the bell. To speak of the close is therefore to speak of a convention, a temporal punctuation rather than a metaphysical boundary. In a global system that trades almost around the clock, the idea of a closing price seems quaint, a holdover from an age when exchanges had doors and traders had to sleep. But even today, these moments of pause are what define the daily and weekly tempo of the financial system. They shape how risk is measured, how funds report performance, and how algorithms reset their bearings. They are, in effect, the metronome of modern finance. And yet not all closes are equal. A daily close is a breath, a short exhalation before the next session begins. A weekly close is a heartbeat, deeper, slower, carrying the weight of institutional memory. Between the two lies a world of difference in how liquidity behaves, how gaps form, and how information seeps or bursts into price. Nowhere is this more visible than in the charts of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, where Friday's stillness and Sunday's reawakening often reveal something the continuous flow cannot, the cost of interruption in a system that pretends to be continuous. It is in this tension, between continuity and pause, between data and rhythm, that we begin to see why daily and weekly closes matter. They are not mere data points on a screen. They are structural expressions of how markets breathe and how we, in turn, interpret those breaths. What do we mean by the close? The word close hides more complexity than the single number suggests. In its narrowest sense, it is the final official price an exchange certifies for a session, the value that accountants, risk engines, and indexers will treat as the reference point for that day. But markets are not one thing, and neither is the close. In some venues, it is the price discovered by an end-of-day auction that deliberately concentrates liquidity into a single match. In others, it is a calculation over a settlement window that may blend trades and quotes to mute noise. In many retail data feeds, it is simply the last trade that went through before the bell, regardless of quality. The distinction matters, because the number you assume as the close will decide what your P&L shows, how your stops and hedges are evaluated, and how any study you run on gaps and fills will behave. Equities make this plain. Most major stock exchanges do not merely stop trading at a bell. They stage a closing auction designed to attract market on close and limit on close interest and to resolve visible order imbalances. The auction is a micro market with its own indicative price and depth that evolve in the final minutes. The official close is the clearing price of that auction, not necessarily the last continuous trade. Funds that track indices, market makers finishing books, and issuers watching their NAVs all care about that auction print because it is both deep and legible to downstream processes. A chart that uses the final continuous tick instead of the auction result is telling a slightly different story than the one the market's plumbing tells. Futures express the idea differently. Because they run nearly around the clock, and because the contract is marked to market daily, the notion of settlement is paramount. The daily settlement price, often computed from a specific time slice of trading and quoting rather than a single print, drives margin calls and the booked P&L on every account that holds the contract. Two traders can agree that the last trade was X, yet the exchange may settle at X plus or minus a small amount based on its rulebook. And that settlement, not the last trade, is what moves cash in or out of accounts. When we later compare daily and weekly behavior in futures, we are really comparing different regimes of settlement and halt, not just different timestamps on a bar. In over-the-counter FX, there is no floor bell and no central auction. Dealers quote continuously across venues 5 days a week, and various fixes, such as common benchmark windows, serve as functional closes for reporting and benchmarking. Here, the close is a convention agreed by users of the convention. It is precisely because there is no true stoppage that Monday gaps can appear when OTC liquidity effectively vanishes over the weekend and then reappears into a changed world. The close, again, is not physics. It is coordination. Crypto adds a final wrinkle. With 24/7 trading and no canonical exchange, the idea of a close is something data vendors impose. Midnight UTC snapshots, exchange-weighted composites, or rolling averages that pretend to be a closing price. This manufactured close is serviceable for charting and backtests, but it is an artifact. The market did not pause. Traders did not face a forced mark. There was no window designed to compress supply and demand into a single reference point. As soon as you compare crypto to session venues, especially to futures that do observe weekend halts, the invented nature of the crypto close becomes a source of visible dislocations. Even within a single asset, the clock can fracture meaning. Exchange local time, your platform's time zone, the standardized UTC of an analyst's dataset, and the custody bank's processing windows will not always align. Daylight saving transitions shift bars. Holidays compress or extend sessions. Some feeds record the settlement as the close. Others record the last trade in regular hours. Others still blend regular and after hours to produce a composite bar. If you do not decide explicitly what you mean by the close for your instrument and your purpose, you will end up proving things that are mainly artifacts of a clock. The common thread in all these variants is function. The close is the system's way of pinning a moving thing to a shared reference so that cash can move, reports can finalize, and exposures can be compared. It is a stop frame in a film that never really stops. That stop frame can be achieved by auction, by formula, by convention, or by fiat. It can align with the last trade or deliberately ignore it. It can represent deep liquidity or merely the absence of it. But whatever the method, the close is consequential because many other processes, margining, NAV calculation, index composition, compliance statements, rebalancing mandates, anchor to it. Once we accept that the close is both a number and a mechanism, we can ask better questions. What happens when the mechanism includes an actual temporal break, as in futures over a weekend? What happens when there is no break, but we pretend there is one, as in crypto end-of-day snapshots? And what happens when the close must also absorb institutional frictions like bank holidays, funding constraints, and clustered expiries that care far more about Fridays than about any given Tuesday? Those questions prepare the ground for the real subject of this essay. Why gaps occur, why they are not created equal, and why the difference between a daily and a weekly close is not just a matter of five bars versus one, but a difference in the very conditions under which prices are allowed to change. Daily close versus weekly close, the structural difference. The difference between a daily and a weekly close is not merely a matter of aggregation, as if five daily bars could be stacked to equal one weekly bar, and nothing essential would change. A daily close is a punctuation mark within an ongoing conversation. A weekly close is the moment the room empties, the lights dim, and the transcript is filed. Each serves a distinct institutional purpose, and that purpose shapes the behavior around it. The daily print is how we keep score within the week, how risk systems refresh exposures, how dealers reconcile inventory, how short horizon strategies reset their reference. The weekly print is how the wider system remembers, how funds report performance, how mandates that speak in weeks and months anchor themselves, how narrative consolidates into a statement of record. One is rhythm, the other is cadence. Consider the time that elapses between each close and the next opportunity to trade. From a daily close to the next session, the period is short and in most instruments, ring-fenced by routine. News can hit overnight, but the machine starts again in hours with familiar counterparties and predictable liquidity. From a weekly close to the next reopen, the period is qualitatively different. Days of accumulated information, weekend or holiday frictions, the closure of funding pipes and balance sheet windows, and the absence of the normal pressure valves that intraday markets provide. What changes is not just the clock. It is the set of constraints under which prices are allowed to adjust. The longer the market is untradable, the more convex the risk of repricing becomes. Information and positioning pressure build with fewer opportunities to release them. This is why the importance of the weekly print is not superstition. It is a function of who must care. Compliance and investor relations read the week, not the day. Many mandates and fee calculations tally on Friday, not Tuesday. Option expiries and futures rolls cluster around weekends, pulling inventory management and hedging into the gravitational field of the weekly close. Dealers who might comfortably carry risk from one day to the next become more cautious when the carry spans a full weekend with no hedgeable path. The preferred response is to lighten up, offset, or insure. That behavior feeds back into the tape. The end of the week invites deliberate position taking and position shedding that a random midweek close does not command with the same authority. There is a microstructural inflection as well. The daily close often lives inside a well-understood mechanism, closing auctions in equities, settlement windows in futures, that concentrates liquidity on purpose. These devices compress order flow into a reference print that downstream systems can treat as robust. The weekly close, by contrast, has to serve two masters. It is an ordinary daily mechanism and also the final reference of the reporting period. The same auction that clears a Thursday might clear a Friday, but the flows that meet in that Friday print reflect a weekend of unhedgeable risk ahead and the optics of being flat or right into a statement. In practice, that means more deliberate flow, more sensitivity to imbalance signals, and more willingness to pay up or back away. On the other side of the weekly print lies a reopen that is not like any other open. Liquidity at a Monday or Sunday start is typically thinner and more easily dislocated. Spreads can be wider. The first prints carry the weight of 2 days' worth of latent disagreement. Even if the absolute amount of new information is small, the absence of continuous trading amplifies its price impact. By symmetry, the reopen after a routine daily close is usually buffered by carryover liquidity and active market-making obligations. Inventory can be adjusted with less drama because the system has not been deprived of its normal release valves for very long. These structural differences echo into how we read charts. A daily bar retains a memory of intraday microstructure. The ebb and flow of liquidity around auctions, the passage of scheduled data, the tug of options hedging, while a weekly bar deliberately filters that noise and elevates the path-independent fact of where we began and where we ended. The filtering is useful for seeing regimes and trends, but it also hides the way risk was born. A calm weekly bar can mask a series of violent intraday swings that were, in practice, extremely costly to carry. A dramatic weekly gap can, conversely, be the simple settling of 2 days' accumulated trivia into a single decisive print. To treat them as interchangeable is to confuse the map with the terrain. And so we arrive at the heart of the essay. Interruptions matter. The market that pauses, and the market that pretends not to pause, will register the same news differently. Nowhere is that clearer than in the behavior of venues that observe explicit halts next to venues that trade through them. Before we can talk about gaps, why they appear on some charts and not others, why a weekly gap is not the same animal as a daily one, we have to look closely at how different markets actually shut down and boot back up, and what their settlement machinery does in the shadows when the screen looks still. How markets actually shut. To understand why the same piece of news can leave different fingerprints on a daily chart and a weekly one, we have to descend from the abstraction of the close into the plumbing that makes a close possible. Markets do not all end in the same way, and the method of ending shapes the quality of the price we call final. In equities, the day culminates in a deliberate act of price discovery, the closing auction. Throughout the last minutes, orders specifically destined for the close gather into a single pool. Imbalances are published, indicative prices update, and participants who care about end-of-day marks step in until a single clearing price absorbs the pressure. That print is not simply the last gasp of the continuous session. It is a separate micro-market engineered to compress liquidity into one reference point that downstream systems can trust. Portfolio managers align NAVs to it, index providers key their calculations to it, and market makers calibrate their books around it. When the bell rings, a great deal has already happened to ensure that the number pinned to the tape is coherent with the institutional world that must use it. Futures follow a different logic. Because they trade nearly around the clock, The ritual is less theatrical and more administrative. The settlement that closes the day is typically computed from a defined window of trading and quoting rather than from a single auction print. And that settlement feeds the daily mark-to-market mechanics that move cash between counterparties. What matters most is not the final tick, but the exchange's settlement formula, because margin calls and booked P&L are functions of that number. This is a crucial difference. In a futures world, you can wake up flat according to your internal book and still be asked for variation margin because the settlement was a few basis points away from the last trade you watched. The close is therefore a legal and financial event as much as a charting event. And when the week ends, the same apparatus becomes the line in the sand that divides one reporting period from the next. Foreign exchange complicates the story by removing the stage altogether. There is no bell and no single venue, only a distributed over-the-counter network that breathes 5 days a week and rests on weekends. Banks and electronic platforms coalesce around benchmark fixes that act as functional closes for those who need one. Custodians pricing flows, asset managers striking NAVs, corporates hedging exposures, but the market itself does not perform a closing ceremony. It simply ceases to be liquid for a while. That makes the Monday open less of a continuation and more of a reestablishment of consensus, which is why a small piece of weekend information can travel farther in price than it would during a liquid weekday hour. The absence of a controlled endpoint means the reference you treat as the close is a convention you adopt, and conventions by definition sometimes collide. Crypto inverts the whole problem. If a market never sleeps, the idea of a close is something data vendors and analysts impose for convenience. Midnight UTC snapshots, exchange-weighted composites, rolling medians, these are workable stand-ins, but the market does not stop to acknowledge them. As long as you stay within the crypto ecosystem, that fiction is mostly harmless. As soon as you compare a perpetual market to a sessioned one, the mismatch reveals itself. A futures venue that shuts over the weekend will reprice to the world that the 24/7 venue discovered in its absence, and the discontinuity will be visible as a gap. The gap is not magic. It is a scar left by two incompatible clocks trying to describe the same underlying demand for risk. Across these regimes runs a quieter thread that often explains more than it appears to. Time itself is not uniform. Exchange local time, your portfolio system's time zone, the UTC of your data lake, and the processing windows of your custodian or prime broker can and do disagree. Daylight saving transitions shift bars. Holidays truncate sessions or shift liquidity to earlier hours. Some feeds publish the settlement as the close. Others record the end of regular hours. Others still blend after hours into a composite. When an analyst tells you that the close did X, you should always ask, according to which clock, by which rule, on which venue. The answer often determines the conclusion. Once we see these closures for what they are, auction, algorithm, convention, or continuous drift temporarily interrupted, we can make sense of the behaviors that puzzle new traders. The tight coherence of equity closing prints is a design choice, so the last bar tends to be robust even on turbulent days. The slightly different feel of futures settlements is also a design choice, so an apparently calm end-of-day tape can still translate into a sizable cash movement on the morning statement. The messy Mondays of FX are what you get when a global conversation picks up after 2 days of silence. The discontinuities on CME charts that seem to appear from nowhere are what you should expect when one venue pauses and the reference market it shadows does not. Markets do not merely close. They close in particular ways. The way they close decides what the next open must do. Why CME charts show gaps? A gap on a CME chart is not a metaphysical mystery. It is the visual footprint of a venue that pauses in a world that does not. CME futures observe daily maintenance breaks and a full weekend halt. When Friday's session ends, the tape goes quiet by design while the reference markets many of those contracts shadow. Cash equities overseas, OTC FX opinions, commodity spot flows, and, most dramatically, 24/7 crypto venues continue to negotiate price. 2 days later, the futures book reopens into a world that has moved without it. The first tradable prints must leap to where the consensus now lives, and everything between Friday's certified reference and Sunday evening's first match is rendered as blank space. The gap is simply the distance between yesterday's final anchor and today's first executable truth on that exchange. The mechanics behind the anchor matter. In futures, the daily result that drives mark-to-market is a settlement, usually computed from a defined window rather than a single last tick. That settlement is the number that moves cash between accounts. It is what risk systems read as the day's close. The Sunday session, by contrast, begins with a genuine open, thin participation, wider spreads, and heightened caution as market makers feel out where 2 days of unexpressed opinion should clear. When Sunday's first prints land far from Friday's settlement, the chart draws a vertical void and names it a gap. Nothing traded there on CME because nothing could. Price did exist there somewhere else, on OTC chats, on other exchanges, on crypto venues, but not on this particular order book, and charts faithfully record venue-specific history. Crypto futures on CME make the point in the starkest relief. Bitcoin trades continuously on major spot venues through Saturday and Sunday, repricing every rumor, hack, and headline hour by hour. CME's Bitcoin futures do not. By the time Globex reopens, the basis between spot and futures, the funding dynamics in perpetual swaps, and the sheer level of spot all may have shifted. The reopen is therefore less a resumption than a reconciliation. The first wave of orders compresses 2 days of micro-adjustments into a handful of prints, which is why the void looks dramatic even when the underlying story is mundane. The market was never still. Only this venue was. The same logic applies, in quieter form, to equity index futures and commodities whose cash markets or proxies continue trading somewhere while CME sleeps. A Friday earnings surprise, a weekend policy leak, a geopolitical flare-up, none of these wait for Globex. Not every hiatus produces a canyon on the chart. Short daily maintenance breaks can yield small discontinuities that barely register, because liquidity is still nearby and the news horizon is short. Weekend halts change the odds. With banks closed, funding pipes quiet, and institutional balance sheets frozen for 2 full days, both information and inventory pressure accumulate. Dealers who would normally bleed risk off incrementally cannot, so they mark their books with more caution into the Friday print and approach the Sunday open with tighter size and wider bands. The same quantum of news travels farther in price when there are fewer hands out to catch it. What looks like drama is often just the arithmetic of pent-up flow meeting thin depth. There is also a narrative temptation to treat gaps as oracles, portents that must fill or launches that confirm a new regime. The microstructure is less mystical. A gap is a vacuum specific to a venue. It tends to fill when subsequent trading has reason and room to traverse the untraded range, and it tends not to fill when the new equilibrium is sticky or when continuing flow defends the new level. Weekend gaps on CME fill often in assets whose 24/7 cousins mean revert after weekend emotion. They persist when the underlying shock is real and ongoing, or when Monday's broader liquidity arrives and endorses the move. The point is not to mystify the picture, but to read it as evidence that two clocks were out of sync and then snapped back together. Understanding this helps dissolve a common confusion. The gap is not missing data. It is missing transactions on this book. The official Friday settlement is a legal and accounting fact for futures holders. The Sunday open is the first executable consensus after a pause. What the eye sees as an empty ladder between them is really the trace of a logistical boundary, a market that halted by rule catching up to a market that never stopped. Once that is clear, we can turn to a subtler question that traders blur too easily. A gap printed after a routine daily close is not the same animal as one that bridges a weekly boundary. The clock, the cash flows, and the institutions that care are different, and those differences shape both the size of the void and what tends to happen next. Daily gap versus weekly gap, not the same thing. A daily gap is a byproduct of a short pause. A weekly gap is the imprint of a long interruption. Between a close on Tuesday and the next morning's open, the market has held its breath for hours, not days. Dealers are still engaged. Balance sheets are still flexible. Banks and funding pipes will open within the same cycle. And the mechanisms that restart trading, the opening auction in equities, the resumption of nearly continuous futures, the reaggregation of OTC quotes, are designed to reconnect price to the prior day's consensus with minimal drama. News can certainly dislocate that reconnection, but the path back to liquidity is close at hand, and the flows that meet the open are largely the same ones that met the close. A daily gap, in other words, reflects a short negotiable absence. A weekly gap is different in kind, not degree. When a venue shuts for the weekend, the system that supports price formation, market-making balance sheets, interbank funding, collateral movement, custody cutoffs, clearing cycles, also shifts to a slower gear or stops altogether. Information still accumulates, positioning still ages, and risk still exists, but the usual release valves are sealed. By the time Sunday evening arrives for futures or Monday morning for cash markets, the first prints must reconcile 2 days of unexpressed disagreement in thinner, more cautious conditions. The jump you see is not only catching up to news, it is also the translation of pent-up inventory pressure and balance sheet constraints into price. The structural frictions of the calendar, the closure of banks, the dormancy of repo and FX swap lines, the optics of end-of-week reporting are part of the gap. This difference in the surrounding plumbing changes the character of the move. Daily gaps are often the residue of overnight information interacting with still nearby liquidity, earnings after the bell, an economic release before the open, a visible auction imbalance that clears at a new level and is then retested once regular trading resumes. They are frequently moderated by after-hours and pre-market activity that lets some of the pressure bleed off before the official open. Weekly gaps are born without those bleed-offs. They open into spreads that are wider, books that are lighter, and participants who would rather discover the new equilibrium by probing than by leaning. The same headline that would have produced a brisk intraday swing on a Wednesday can carve a visible canyon across a weekend because there were no intermediate trades to stair-step toward the new consensus. Settlement adds another layer. In a daily context, the number that anchors P&L is yesterday's closing auction or futures settlement, and the next session arrives before that anchor has had time to harden into narrative. Across the weekend, settlement is also a line between reporting periods. Funds show clients Friday's figure, margin is called to that figure, and risk is warehoused against that figure for 2 days without a hedgeable path. When the market reopens, the first executable price is adjudicating not only new information, but also the truthfulness of that line in the sand. If it proves wrong, the correction is swift and often one-sided until books are realigned. This is why weekly gaps can feel stickier when they reflect genuine regime information, and softer when they merely mark weekend emotion that dissipates into Monday depth. Because their causes differ, their aftermaths differ too. Daily gaps are frequently contested early. Inventory from the prior day meets fresh flow, and the market has ample room during the same week to traverse the untraded range if the new level lacks sponsorship. Weekly gaps face a different ecology. If Monday's broader participation endorses the new price, because the underlying shock is real, because hedging programs must chase, because options Greeks have shifted, then the gap can become a new shelf rather than a vacuum to be filled. If instead, the weekend repricing overshoots in thin conditions, the restoration of weekday depth often draws price back through the void. None of this is fate. It is conditional microstructure. Treating both kinds of gaps as the same statistical animal is a reliable way to learn the wrong lesson. The practical consequence is simple, but often ignored. A chart that shows a blank space looks the same whether it bridges a Tuesday night or a weekend, but the trade that lives inside that space is not the same. One represents a brief absence in a still liquid week. The other represents a structural interruption with cash flow, balance sheet, and reporting consequences. Strategies, risk limits, and even backtests that do not encode that difference, by labeling gap types, aligning time zones, and respecting settlement regimes, will confuse timing artifacts for signal. Read the void for what it is, not a mystery, but a record of how the market's clock governs the way price is allowed to change. Mechanical versus logistical differences that matter. What makes a close consequential is not merely that a clock runs out, but that a set of legal, accounting, and operational processes are triggered the moment the clock does. The first and most material of these is settlement. In futures, daily settlement is a cash-moving event. Positions are marked to a reference computed by the exchange, and variation margin flows accordingly. That settlement, rather than the last trade you remember seeing, becomes the number your broker, your clearinghouse, and your risk engine treat as truth. Across a week, the same mechanism doubles as a boundary in the ledger. Friday's settlement is not just a price. It is the line on which funds report performance, on which margin is called, and against which 2 days of unhedgeable risk will be warehoused. When the market reopens, the first executable price is judging that line. If it was generous, cash must leave some accounts and enter others. If it was harsh, the inverse occurs. The weekly close therefore carries a heavier administrative gravity than the daily one, and that gravity shapes behavior around both the print and the reopen. Liquidity availability is the next axis on which daily and weekly closes depart. Into a routine daily close, counterparties are still present, closing auctions deliberately concentrate depth, and the gap to the next session is short enough that market makers are willing to carry inventory with relatively tight bands. The mechanisms that restart trading, opening auctions in equities, near-continuous Globex in futures, reaggregation of OTC quotes, are built to reconnect quickly to the prior consensus. A weekly close sits on different plumbing. Banks are shut, repo and FX swap lines are quiet, collateral cannot be shuffled with the same ease. Cross-margin offsets are slower to realize. Dealers who might otherwise lean into risk step back, not out of superstition, but because their balance sheets cannot be actively hedged for 48 hours. The result is deliberate de-risking into Friday and cautious, thinner participation at the Sunday or Monday open. Identical news has a larger price impact when there are fewer hands and shallower books to absorb it. Holidays and clustered events amplify these frictions. A long weekend turns the weekly boundary into an even thicker wall. Settlement hardens into a number that must be carried for 3 days. Statements freeze for longer, and the universe of plausible headlines grows. So do expiries and rolls. Options that die on Friday force dealers to rehedge deltas and gammas into the close. Index rebalances and futures rolls pull flows into the same window. None of this is mystical end-of-week energy. It is flow choreography. Mandates that speak in weeks, contracts that settle on Fridays, and programs that all point their execution at the same closing bell. The weekly print may be generated by the same auction or settlement formula as any other day, but the mix of motives that meet it is different, and the price that emerges bears the imprint of those motives. Logistics reach into the mundane details that quietly decide outcomes. The time zone in which your system records the close, the vendor's choice to stamp the settlement, or the last regular hours trade, the interaction with daylight saving transitions and local holidays, each decision shifts where your close sits relative to the market's operational realities. Backtests that treat closes as interchangeable points on a uniform grid smuggle in these choices as if they were neutral. They are not. A strategy tuned to a daily close that is really an auction print may behave differently from one tuned to a last trade composite. A risk model calibrated to a future settlement will mark differently than one calibrated to the final tick. A dataset aligned to UTC will slice weekends differently than one aligned to exchange local time. Precision about which close you mean is not pedantry. It is the difference between modeling a mechanism and modeling a picture of that mechanism. All of these mechanical and logistical features converge on a simple truth. A daily close ends a session. A weekly close reorganizes the balance sheet of the market. The first is a pause that systems are designed to bridge with minimal loss of continuity. The second is a stoppage that compels the system to crystallize exposures, halt the usual hedging reflexes, and then renegotiate consensus from a colder start. When we later speak about how gaps behave, why some fill and others don't, or why Monday moves feel stickier or softer, we are really reading the residue of these structures. Daily and weekly closes are both numbers on a chart, but they live in different worlds of settlement, liquidity, and logistics. The tape remembers those worlds even when the bars look the same. Cross-asset and macro spillovers closes do not happen in isolation. They happen inside a mesh. The final print in one market is immediately read by the markets that hedge it, fund it, or benchmark against it. When an equity index locks in its closing auction, the futures that track it absorb that number into fair value calculations. The options written on both inherit a new set of deltas and gammas. The ETFs that promise intraday liquidity against an end-of-day NAV must reconcile their basket to the auction print. If the close is a little scar on a single chart, the spillovers are the scar tissue that forms across the whole body. A daily close whispers across this network because continuity is nearby. A weekly close speaks louder because funding, balance sheets, and mandate optics are all listening at once. The tight coupling of equities, futures, and options makes this visible. Into a routine weekday close, the auction compresses cash flow into a legible reference that futures and options desks can hedge against within hours. Across a weekend, the same system is forced to hibernate with marks that cannot be defended in real time. Options decay continues on the calendar even as trading sleeps, so Monday's surface must reprice both the lost time and whatever new information arrived while dealers could not adjust. A change in implied volatility that would have been absorbed gradually midweek appears as a step change when screens relight. If the weekly print misstates where risk truly sits, the first hours of the new week are not merely price discovery. They are a re-hedging exercise conducted in thinner conditions, and the tape reflects the mechanical scramble as much as any fresh conviction. Rates and foreign exchange translate the same problem into the language of funding. The close that divides a business day from the next has one set of implications for collateral, repo, and swap lines. The close that divides one week from the next has another. Over a weekend, the plumbing slows. Banks shut windows, cross-currency basis can widen, and the cost of carrying inventory through to Monday rises relative to a midweek night. That shows up in how aggressively dealers lighten exposures on Friday, in how they quote on Sunday evening, and in the way Monday fixes digest a backlog of real economy flows that could not clear while the pipes were cold. Even when nothing happened, the mere fact of two untradable days changes the price of being wrong. Commodities and macro assets add another layer of asymmetry because the real world does not respect exchange hours. A refinery fire, a shipping disruption, a policy leak, any of these can surface on a Saturday. Spot markets, physical premia, and OTC chatter will evolve around the event while listed futures sleep. The weekly reopen must stitch that informal price discovery back into a standardized contract with margin and clearing attached. Sometimes the stitching is neat. Sometimes the seam shows as a wide Sunday gap that refuses to fill because logistics, not emotion, are driving the repricing. Daily gaps born of overnight headlines often meet quick resistance once regular liquidity arrives. Weekly gaps born of physical constraints or policy shocks can become new shelves the market builds on. Crypto crystallizes the spillover in its purest form. A 24/7 spot universe keeps marking truth while CME's crypto futures do not. By Sunday, the basis between the never-sleeping market and the sleeping one may have twisted multiple times. Funding dynamics and perpetuals may have flipped sign, and the path that led there, irrelevant to a weekly bar, has reallocated risk across venues. The futures reopen is therefore a translation, not a continuation. When translation happens into thin depth, the move can overshoot or undershoot before Monday breath arrives, which is why some of the most theatrical gaps live where perpetual clocks and sessioned clocks try to agree on reality after pretending not to know each other for 48 hours. All of this refracts back into narratives investors actually read. Performance is reported weekly and monthly, not hour by hour. Mandates are judged on Friday marks, not Wednesday mid-afternoon excursions. A quiet weekly candle can hide a costly series of intraday rescues during the week. A dramatic weekly gap can be the honest admission of a truth that OTC desks and weekend markets already priced, merely condensed into one moment because listed venues were mute. The practical lesson is not sentimental. When you look at any close, you are also looking at the state of the bridges that tie assets together. Daily bridges can bear more weight with less drama. Weekly bridges carry the same weight after 2 days of deferred maintenance. The difference shows up not only in the bar you see, but in the way everything connected to that bar must move to stay aligned. Strategy implications, execution and risk. If the close is a mechanism rather than a mere timestamp, execution around it becomes a choice of which mechanism you want to be exposed to and at what price. Into a routine daily close, the auction in equities and the settlement window in futures offer depth on purpose. You can buy or sell the certainty of a widely observed reference print. Paying with some slippage against the indicative price or the settlement formula, but receiving in return a number that downstream systems will treat as canonical. That certainty can be worth more than a few ticks when your mandate, your benchmark, or your client report keys off that very print. The alternative is to avoid the gravity well and work the order earlier via participation algorithms that spread your footprint across liquidity pockets. You will regain some price control at the cost of basis risk to the closing mark. In practice, disciplined desks toggle between these modes depending on what they are optimizing for, tracking error to a mark or absolute price achieved. The trap is to do neither, arriving late without committing to the auction or arriving early and then succumbing to the imbalance signal you meant to avoid. The reopen after a daily close invites a different calculus. Overnight information may be fresh, but liquidity is close by and the players are familiar. If you must express a view at the open, the question is whether you want to pay for immediacy in the first prints, or let the book discover itself for a few minutes while you stage at levels where adverse selection is lower. In volatile regimes, a patient first hour can be worth more than a clever thesis. The microstructure carries more edge than the opinion. Stops and limits whose logic depends on continuous trading are at least serviceable here because the pause has been brief. You can, with some confidence, treat a daily gap as terrain to traverse rather than a canyon to leap. A weekly boundary rewrites these tactics. If you carry risk into a weekend on a venue that halts, your stop will not exist while the book is closed. You are exchanging continuous control for a lottery ticket drawn at the Sunday or Monday open, when spreads are widest and depth is lightest. Traders who understand this either insure the risk or reduce it. Insurance looks like optionality. Collars that define the worst case, cheap out-of-the-money protection that pays for the tail, or calendar structures that monetize the decay you will eat anyway across two idle days. Reduction looks like proxies, shorting-related instruments that remain tradable, shifting some delta into a 24/7 venue with acceptable basis risk, or lightening the position outright so that the reopen cannot make or break the week. None of these choices are free. Options bleed, proxies slip, and outright exits can cost you the very exposure you wanted. The point is not to eliminate gap risk, that is impossible, but to choose the form you will bear it in. The closing print at week's end also attracts flows that are not about your view, and navigating those flows is part of competent execution. Options that expire on Friday roll Greeks across the street, even if you do nothing. Index rebalances invite baskets that care only about inclusion and weight. Futures rolls drag liquidity toward calendar keys that may not align with your horizon. If you are benchmarked, you ride these currents. If you are not, you either get out of their way or use them. There is real craft in letting someone else's deadline supply the other side of your trade. There is equal craft in knowing when that deadline will make price fragile enough that waiting for Monday depth is the higher probability path, even if it offends your impatience. Risk management around closes is largely the art of admitting what cannot be controlled. A stop is a convention. A halt is a fact. If your entire plan depends on getting out at a level that cannot print during a closure, you do not have a plan, you have a hope. Frameworks that recognize this translate directional conviction into structures with bounded downside across the calendar. They also resize positions with respect to the length of the coming untradable window, treating a weekend as a different risk unit than a weeknight. This looks unfashionably conservative until you map it to cash flows. Variation margin called to a generous Friday settlement and returned on a punishing Monday. Open can be survivable only if your sizing assumed that sequence in advance. Backtests and research are not exempt from these realities. They are especially vulnerable to them. A simulation that uses close without specifying whether it means auction, last trade, or settlement is already corrupting its own claims. A study that treats weekend opens as just another open is discovering properties of its dataset's clock, not of the market. Clean Practice labels daily and weekly gaps, aligns time zones to the venue's operational clock, models the opening auction or settlement window explicitly, and forbids itself the look-ahead implicit in using a number that was not knowable at the decision time it pretends to simulate. Do this, and many alluring patterns evaporate. What remains is smaller but truer. It is also tradable. Finally, there is the discipline of doing nothing. The most expensive fills of a career often live in the first minutes after a weekend when the book is thin, your narrative is loud, and the urge to prove you are early overwhelms the simple arithmetic of waiting for breadth. The market will make another price. Your job is to decide whether you want the one that thin depth offers to anyone who insists, or the one that fuller participation discovers once the pipe's warm. Around a daily close, you can indulge more bravado because the system is built to forgive it. Around a weekly close, you are negotiating with the calendar itself. It always wins. Case studies. The abstractions become tangible when you watch specific markets traverse a weekend. Consider Bitcoin futures on CME. The futures book sleeps from the Friday settlement until the Sunday evening reopen, but the underlying spot market never does. Through Saturday and Sunday, spot exchanges digest a steady drip of headlines, liquidations, and shifts in perpetual funding that tug the basis around. By the time Globex comes back, the futures need to translate 2 days of continuous micro-adjustment into a handful of executable prints. The first minutes look less like a continuation and more like a reconciliation. Thin quotes, cautious sighs, a jump to where spot has been living, and then a negotiation as arbitragers test how much of the weekend path survives contact with listed liquidity. When the weekend emotion has overreached in the perpetuals, Monday breadth often pulls the futures back through the void. When the weekend news is fundamental, an enforcement shock, a structural outage, a policy turn, the new level holds and the gap is simply the honest condensation of a path the futures were not allowed to walk. Equity index futures offer a quieter but equally revealing version of the same film. The S&P 500 E-mini closes on a Friday after an auction that bears the weight of expiries, rebalances, and a week's worth of balance sheet tidying. 2 days later, it opens into depth that is thinner than any weekday hour and must price the accumulated weekend narrative, policy chatter, global macro data released abroad, corporate developments that did not warrant a press release, but will move positioning all the same. Sometimes the Sunday evening repricing is modest, and the range fills quickly when cash equities open and ETFs supply their formidable intraday liquidity. Sometimes it is not modest at all, and the Monday cash open is less a discovery of value than a synchronization of ecosystems. With options desks, rehedging surface shifts that time decay and the weekend move have already forced, foreign exchange lives without a bell, but it does not live without a weekend. Dealers go dark, retail platforms freeze, and the street reconvenes on Monday to discover where consensus has drifted while phones were off. The Monday prints in ERSD or USD/JPY are therefore a reestablishment of quotation rather than a mere extension of Friday's trend. In quiet macro weather, the Asia session often draws price back toward the prior close as real money flows and exporters reappear. In stormier regimes, the surprise from a central bank speech, a geopolitical flare, a capital controls rumor, the first marks stretch farther because there were no intermediate trades to stair-step the move. The gap here is not a single venue's artifact, but a social fact. There was nowhere liquid to disagree until there suddenly was. Energy futures add the stubbornness of logistics to the picture. Brent and WTI sleep on listed screens while the physical world continues to arrange barrels. A refinery accident, a shipping disruption, a weekend policy leak, none of these ask an exchange for permission. By Monday, the futures must stitch informal price discovery back into a standardized contract with margin and clearing attached. When the driver is transitory sentiment, weekday depth often neutralizes the weekend leap. When the driver is constraint, a pipeline shutdown, an embargo that actually binds, a sudden change to inventory expectations, the weekly gap hardens into a new shelf because the tape is negotiating with tanks, not tweets. The distinction between daily and weekly becomes obvious in the aftermath. An overnight gap finds resistance and counterparties quickly. A weekend gap born of logistics encounters neither until operations change. If you want to reproduce these observations rather than admire them, the path is straightforward, even if it is not glamorous. Choose a venue and define the close it recognizes. Auction print for cash equities, settlement for futures, a benchmark fix for FX, and fix your clock to the venue's operational time rather than to a convenient UTC. Mark gaps as the distance between that recognized close and the next session's first executable price, and then segregate those distances by whether they bridge a routine night or a weekend or holiday. Once you do, the distribution tells its own story. Weekday pauses mostly express overnight information into nearby liquidity and are contested early. Weekend pauses compound information with funding and balance sheet frictions and resolve into thinner books that either endorse the new level or unwind it only when Monday breath returns. The charts look similar. The conditions that produce them do not. Do weekly gaps fill more or less than daily gaps? The urge to turn gaps into rules is powerful. Traders want the blank space to promise a destination. If price leaps, surely it must retrace and stitch the chart back together. The trouble begins with what we mean by a fill. If you define it as any later print that touches the prior close, history is generous. If you define it as a feasible trade that captures the move without a ruinous adverse excursion, history is far less kind. The first definition flatters backtests because time is long and markets meander. The second definition confronts the fact that fills often arrive after stops would have been triggered, capital reallocated, or the cost of carry has erased the edge. Before asking whether weekly gaps fill more or less than daily ones, it is worth admitting that the answer depends on whether we are measuring geometry or tradability. With that caveat in place, the character of the pause matters. Daily gaps emerge from a short interruption that still lives inside the week's liquidity. Because counterparties reappear quickly and the opening mechanisms are designed to reconnect price to yesterday's consensus, many daily gaps are contested almost immediately. The tape often oscillates around the new level as inventory from the prior day meets early flows, and the route back to the old close is open if the overnight news lacks sponsorship. Weekly gaps, by contrast, are born into a thinner book and carry 2 days of unexpressed positioning. When Monday's broader participation endorses the new price, because the shock is fundamental, because options hedgers must chase, because systematic rebalancing has turned from bystander to participant, the gap behaves less like a vacuum to be filled and more like a shelf to build on. In quiet macro weather, weekly gaps can and do fade as depth returns. In charged regimes, they linger, not because charts have magic, but because balance sheets and narratives align to keep them there. The distribution of sizes amplifies this difference. Daily gaps cluster around smaller magnitudes with occasional outliers on earnings, data surprises, or idiosyncratic headlines. Weekly gaps inherit the convexity of the weekend. 2 calendar days of information, the shuttering of funding pipes, and a cold start at the reopen produce larger discontinuities on average and fatter tails. Larger discontinuities take larger flows to neutralize. When they are born of thin Sunday conditions rather than durable change, the subsequent arrival of Monday liquidity can supply those flows and pull price back. When they are born of a genuine shift, policy turns, binding logistical constraints in commodities, structural news in a cross-asset driver, no amount of routine depth wants the other side at yesterday's level, and the gap survives long enough to be mistaken for a new range because, functionally, it is. Options and dealer positioning tilt the odds further. Into a weekday close, dealers often carry gamma that dampens the next day's move, encouraging reversion toward the recent mean. Across a weekend, expiring contracts, recalibrated deltas, and a jump in implied volatility at the reopen can transform the same dealers into momentum amplifiers rather than shock absorbers. If the open reprices the surface and forces hedging in the direction of the gap, the very mechanics designed to keep markets orderly will delay any neat return to Friday's number. Later in the session, as new supply arrives and gamma rebuilds, the probability of a retrace improves. The point is not that options dictate fate, but that the microstructure surrounding the first hours after a weekly reopen often leans against the quick, tidy fill that tempts a textbook. Empirics are seductive and treacherous in equal measure. A naive study that checks whether the old close is touched at any time in the next five sessions will conclude that many gaps fill, daily or weekly alike, because time eventually supplies coincidence. Tighten the rules to reflect how traders actually experience risk. Entry that can be executed without crossing error, stops that acknowledge weekend slippage, exits that pay for the cost of capital, and the edge compresses, especially for weekly structures. Moreover, instruments differ. Single name equities with active after hours and pre-market trading exhibit different gap ecologies from index futures that reopen on Sunday evening, which differ again from FX pairs whose gap is a social reconstruction of quotation. Crypto muddies the pool further because the perpetual market never sleeps, so the notion of a fill on a listed venue is partly the story of two clocks realigning. Any aggregated claim about fill rates that ignores these microstructures is more parable than proof. There are, nevertheless, conditions that make fades more likely and others that make persistence the default. Fades flourish when the catalyst is shallow, when the weekend move traveled too far in thin depth, when the following session's calendar offers liquidity events that pull flows through the void, and when cross-asset anchors disagree with the new level and quietly drag it home. Persistence thrives when the catalyst is fundamental, when Monday's broad participation must mechanically re-hedge into the move, when funding constraints or physical bottlenecks enforce the repricing, and when policy or macro narrative changes reduce the old close to a historical curiosity. Stated this way, the conclusion is almost banal, but it rescues us from superstition. Gaps do not fill or persist because they are gaps. They fill or persist because the conditions that created them either vanish with daylight or survive it. For the practitioner, the operational question is always the same. What would have to be true for this void to close in a way I can capture? And can I afford to be wrong until that truth arrives? A daily gap that opens into robust depth, with no structural driver and with options flows leaning toward reversion, invites a measured attempt to fade. A weekly gap that arrives on the back of policy, logistics, or cross-asset confirmation and is immediately endorsed by Monday breadth is not an invitation. It is a warning that the map has changed. The chart will eventually print yesterday's number again because time is generous and markets range. Your capital may not be so patient. The discipline lies in trading the conditions, not the geometry. Practical uses for investors and builders. The difference between a daily and a weekly close is easiest to respect when it is expensive to ignore. For investors who report to clients, the weekly mark is the line that turns a moving story into a statement. It decides how returns are narrated, how risk committees assess exposure, and how much of the week's drawdown or recovery becomes part of the account's official memory. A portfolio that sailed through violent intraday swings can look serene at the Friday print. Another that traded prudently all week can be made to look reckless if the weekend reopen punishes a position that could not be hedged. The craft, therefore, is to align decision-making to the clock that will be read. If your stakeholders will judge the week, then carry, hedging, and sizing must speak in that cadence. If you want your investors to understand the cost of a closure, you show them both numbers, the canonical close and the first executable price after the hiatus, so that they can see the gap not as a failure, but as the fee the calendar sometimes charges. For traders, the close is a choice about what kind of uncertainty you want to own. Around a daily boundary, uncertainty is largely informational and microstructural. The book will be back within hours, the counterparties will still be there, and most mistakes can be corrected with manageable slippage. Around a weekly boundary, uncertainty becomes institutional. Banks are shut, collateral does not move, and stops are promises that cannot be kept while the venue sleeps. The position that feels modest on a Thursday afternoon can be oversized when measured against a Sunday open that has no depth. Working capital, margin headroom, and the psychological appetite to accept a leap rather than a path are part of the sizing decision in a way they are not midweek. The discipline is unglamorous. Reduce when the calendar demands it, ensure when you cannot reduce, and resist the urge to chase the very first prince after a long pause when the book is still guessing at where consensus lives. Builders, by which we mean the people who design data pipelines, analytics, and backtests, have their own responsibility to encode the market's clocks rather than averaging them away. A dataset that records a single close without telling you whether it is an auction result, a last regular hour's trade, or a settlement is laying a trap. A research platform that stamps everything in UTC without carrying the venue's local time and holiday logic will quietly move weekends and maintenance windows to places they do not belong. The better approach is more fussy and more faithful. Store the last trade and the official close when they differ. Store the future settlement separately from the last tick. Store the first executable price of the next session as its own field. Label whether the boundary crossed a routine night, a weekend, or a holiday. Carry the exchange calendar and daylight saving transitions as first-class citizens. When those details exist in the data, the questions traders actually ask: did this gap happen across a Friday? Did it fill in tradable conditions? Did the auction disagree with the tape? Become answerable without folklore. Once these foundations are in place, the tools become simpler to build and more honest to use. Dashboards that show both the weekly candle and the path that produced it prevent complacency about quiet statements that hit a costly journey. Execution reports that separate slippage to the closing auction from slippage to the settlement window help desks decide which certainty they are paying for. Risk pages that simulate the effect of a two-day halt on open positions, with spreads widened and depth reduced to Sunday norms, turn a theoretical warning into a number that can be sized against. Even something as mundane as an alert system improves when it knows the difference between a daily and a weekly gap. One invites a fast look for mean reversion once regular liquidity returns. The other warns that the first attempt may be the most dangerous trade of the week. Bridges between markets deserve the same care. If your process spans a venue that sleeps and one that does not, the interface is where errors and opportunities are born. The weekend basis between a perpetual crypto venue and a listed futures contract is either a source of edge or a source of pain, depending on whether your systems can see it, fund it, and carry it. The equities futures options triangle behaves one way on a Wednesday and another on a Monday morning, not because correlations have changed, but because the mechanics of hedging and settlement have. Builders who expose these regime shifts to users, through fair value monitors that recalibrate at the reopen, through option surfaces that reprice time decay across closures, through liquidity meters that admit when the book is thin, give traders a chance to act like adults in a market that sometimes forces everyone to be superstitious. In the end, practical use is a matter of coherence. Investors communicate in the cadence they are judged by. Traders choose their uncertainty with open eyes. Builders model the clocks as they are rather than as they wish them to be. When all three are aligned, daily and weekly closes stop being a source of avoidable error and become what they were meant to be. Agreed moments that let a continuous world be measured without pretending it ever really stopped. Where the clock meets the river, markets are rivers, closes are clocks. The river does not stop because the clock says it should, and yet we need the clock to make sense of the river. A daily close is the second hand clicking forward, useful, proximate, a way to name where we are in the current. A weekly close is the tolling of a bell, slower, weightier, the sound by which a community remembers time. Between them, the same water flows, but our obligations to it change. We mark to market not because nature pauses, but because without a shared pause, we cannot settle our debts to one another or to ourselves. Seen this way, the gap is not a glitch in the chart, but a confession. It admits that our instruments must sometimes pretend the world is still in order to be accountable to it later. Futures sleep while spot dreams. Banks close their windows while risk keeps breathing. A ledger line hardens on Friday so that on Monday we can begin again without chaos. The blank space between those moments is the price we pay for coordination. It is the visible scar of two clocks that serve us well in isolation and quarrel when placed side by side. What counts then is not the romance of the candle, but the honesty of the mechanism. If we know what a close really is, auction or settlement, convention or ceremony, we can read the tape without superstition. A weekly leap that does not fill is not disobedience to a rule. It is the market telling you the week reorganized balance sheets and beliefs. A swift Monday fade is not mercy. It is breadth returning to a level discovered in thin air. To trade these moments is to choose which uncertainty you will accept, the small frictions of a daily pause, or the larger unknowns of a weekend that will not honor your stop. There is an ethic buried in this craft. Respect the clocks that bind you. Do not ask a river to obey them. Size for the calendar you actually face. Name your closes precisely so you do not outsource discipline to folklore. Build systems that remember how the book opens after silence and how cash moves when a settlement disagrees with your last remembered tick. None of this makes the market safer. It makes you truer to the market you are in. In the end, a close is a human invention in service of a human need to freeze a restless world long enough to speak clearly about it. Daily or weekly, it is a promise to meet again with the books balanced and the stories reconciled. Trade the structure, not the wish. Let gaps remind you that continuity is a story we tell each other so that we can act. And when the bell tolls on a Friday, or the screen flickers to life on a Sunday night, remember that you are standing where the clock meets the river, where precision must make peace with flow.